March 12th, just back from the So Sisters. This month's block of the month is called Stars in Stripes, which is an old World War II era pattern. We're very much about the historical patterns here in the So Sisters. Lynn, who's our pattern director, said this month's block was inspired by my recent reports about Maisie Baker McGrath. Quilters from the World War II era get overlooked, Lynn complained as we settled into our stitching this morning. Everyone loves the 1930s quilts and all the Great Depression quilt history, but then it's like we skip over World War II and head straight for the Great Quilt Revival and the Bicentennial. Donna Boynton held up her half-stitched red, white, and blue Stars and Stripes block. This made me think about the Bicentennial for sure. I was in high school, and it seemed like everything around that time was red, white, and blue, for 2 years at least. I had a red, white, and blue poncho, and a red, white, and blue bedspread, and my mom made a red, white, and blue Afghan that my sisters and I used to fight over when we were watching TV. In fifth grade, I had a bicentennial lunchbox, and my friends and I went trick-or-treating as an American flag, Leslie recalled. I was the stars. I made 50 tinfoil stars and pasted them all over myself. How long did they stay on? Jean wanted to know. Not very long, Leslie told her. I should have safety pinned them instead. Was this in 1976 or 1975? Karen asked. Pre-bicentennial or post? Oh, 1975, Leslie said. Definitely pre. By Halloween of 1976, no one cared anymore. We were all into Charlie's Angels and Laverne and Shirley. We spent the next 30 minutes recounting our favorite TV shows of the mid to late 1970s, ending with a celebration of Valerie Bertinelli, who is as adorable now as she was when she first appeared in One Day at a Time all those years ago. These kinds of conversations are why I enjoy quilting in a group. Talking about lunchboxes and favorite TV shows makes people so happy. Now, anyone who lived through the 70s knows that there was plenty of unhappiness during those years, from Vietnam to Watergate, from the gas shortage to the Iran hostage crisis. The fashions were awful, and the colorways, burnt orange, mustard brown, and avocado, should never be revived. Most of the TV was idiotic, because most of the TV of any era is almost always idiotic. But even having lived through it, I still get a misty sort of feeling when I think about the Bicentennial or the first time I ever watched Happy Days. It's hard to imagine having those same sort of feelings about our current culture, but who knows? Nostalgia erases the bad stuff, leaving only sweetness behind. Maybe that's why I even have fond memories of junior high. March 18th. I celebrated St. Patrick's Day at Abby's place. Daryl celebrated it with his men's group at Mickey McTavish's Pub and Bar. Yes, that's right, Pub and Bar. Why? No one knows. There's no Mickey McTavish to ask, of course. The place is near the mall and pretty new. Daryl thinks it may have been entirely designed by AI, but they had green beer for St. Patrick's Day, and that's all that mattered to the guys in the men's group. I was looking forward to having the house to myself for the evening. My plan was to eat leftover pizza for dinner, mushroom, sausage, and onion, my favorite, and then rewatch the second Downton Abbey movie while doing some English paper piecing. Daryl teased me that I was making my plans with the wrong country in mind. At the very least, wear some green, he told me on his way out. I looked terrible in green, so I ignored him. I was just taking the pizza out of the fridge when I got a text from Jessica. Please say you'll come with me to Mom's tonight, she'd written. I tried to get out of it, but she's not taking no for an answer. I gazed longingly at my pizza, imagining how gooey the cheese would be after I'd reheated it in the toaster oven. "What exactly does Abby have planned?" I texted back. "Mom and Jason are having a St. Patrick's Day cookout," came the reply. "Last minute. They're celebrating 4 months together." "They live in an apartment building," I texted. "Where's the grill?" "On the rooftop," Jessica replied. "They're grilling salmon and cabbage. Sam's got a big presentation tomorrow, so he can't go, and I just don't want to go alone." "Any reason why not?" I hit send and then returned my pizza to the fridge. Whatever Jessica's reason, I knew I'd be going to Abby's. Jessica's reply came a moment later. "I'll tell you in the car," was all it said. "That can't be good," I thought as I went upstairs to change clothes. But for the life of me, I couldn't think what the problem might be. As far as I knew, Jessica and Abby hadn't had a falling out. Abby was as self-centered as ever, but she seemed to be making an effort to stop by to see the grandkids on occasion, and she was always giving Alyssa cute little eco-friendly outfits. I hadn't heard Jessica complain about her mother in ages. 30 minutes later, Jessica texted to let me know that she had just pulled into the driveway. In my humble opinion, the "I'm here" text is so much preferable to the "I'm here" honk. I grabbed my purse, took one last look in the mirror so I could confirm that I'm still 64 and could use a haircut, and then headed out. Jessica gave me a sad smile as I slid into the passenger seat. "Thanks, Marn. I really appreciate this. At least you don't have to cook dinner, right? Even making dinner for one is kind of a pain." I tried not to think about my pizza, cold and lonely in the fridge. "Right, it's great to get a night off," I said. "Now, do you want to tell me why you couldn't go to Abby's by yourself?" Jessica backed the car out of the driveway and started down the road before she answered. "This is hard, Marnie. It's really hard." She sounded like she might cry. I put my hand on her arm. "What's hard, hon?" "It's just that..." She paused. "It's just that I'm pretty sure Jason hit on me the last time I was over there without Sam." "How sure is pretty sure?" I asked, although it was clear from Jessica's expression that the answer was 100% sure. "I was over there a couple of weeks ago, and when Mom was in the kitchen putting together a cheese platter, Jason sat next to me on the couch, really close. Mom's birthday was coming up, and Jason said that she'd asked him to buy her some lingerie. It would be a present for both of them." Which, okay, gross. "Anyway, Jason went on to say that maybe I could help him pick a few things out for Mom, and maybe I could model them for him. At first I thought he was kidding, like he was kind of poking fun at the fact that he's my age and dating a woman my mother's age. You know, this situation is kind of awkward, isn't it?" I stared at her. "That's what you thought?" Jessica shrugged. "I know. It's dumb. But at the moment, I was in shock. I mean, I couldn't believe he was hitting on me with my mom 15 feet away. Plus, I'm married. Not to mention the fact that I'm a little young for him." "By about 30 years, if Abby's any indication of his taste in women," I agreed. "But Jess, you have to tell her." "I can't, Marn. It would break her heart." "Jason's going to break her heart sooner or later," I pointed out. "He's the kind of man who hits on his girlfriend's daughter. This won't end well." "I know, but I just can't do it," Jessica said. "Are you afraid she won't believe you?" Jessica shook her head. "No, she'll believe me. But I don't want to be involved in any way with her getting her heart broken. But I do have an idea. I took a deep breath. Whatever Jessica's idea was, I had a feeling I wasn't going to like it. I was right. So, remember Thanksgiving? Jessica began. How Jason kept Emily company while she was smoking on the balcony? I thought you could text Emily now and see if she wants to come to the cookout tonight. Last minute invite, it's going to be a big time, etc. And then when she gets there, we arrange it so she and Jason have a moment or two alone together. Then afterwards, we can ask her if he made a move. Don't you think there's something creepy about using Emily as bait? Jessica's face fell. Yeah, probably. I could ask Emily if Jason hit on her at Thanksgiving, I offered. Would you? Jessica reached over and gave my hand a squeeze. That would be amazing. Don't get your hopes up, I warned. That was in the early days of Jason and Abby's relationship. He was pretty smitten. It doesn't matter, Jessica insisted. Guys like Jason are always on the prowl. It finally occurred to me to ask about Sam. Does he know that Jason hit on you? He knows something happened, Jessica told me. I left out the part about the lingerie. I sort of lied and said that Jason asked me out for a drink. Sam was pretty mad about it, but he didn't think I should tell Mom. He said Jason had probably had too many cocktails. So Sam doesn't know about the lingerie. Exactly. The lingerie would have changed everything, Jessica said. I nodded. Lingerie usually does. The cookout was fine, though I spent most of it glaring at Jason and sending mean vibes in his direction. Jessica more or less stayed glued to my side the whole time in an effort to avoid Jason getting her alone, I assume. Abby was clueless. And why wouldn't she be? As always, she looked fantastic, and she's always thrived in the role of hostess. Jason acted the way he always acted around her, adoring, attentive, all of it. I'm going to Thimble Pleasures in a few minutes, and I'll ask Emily if she's had any recent run-ins with Jason. Fingers crossed that he hit on her at Thanksgiving, I guess. I mean, I know that's a terrible thing to say, but it would be better for everybody if Abby never knows that Jason made a move on her daughter. March 21st. The bad news. Jason didn't make a move on Emily. Is that also good news? I'm not sure. It's such a soap opera, Sheila said after I told her the whole story at lunch on Monday. As much as I love having young people in my life, they're always dragging along so much drama behind them. I feel like I'm in high school, I agreed. Taking a bite of my Jackie O sandwich, brie and avocado with pesto mayo on a toasted baguette. This will sound awful, but I really wish Jessica hadn't told me. I'm here for the tough stuff, the middle-of-the-night emergencies, any serious illnesses that, God forbid, might arise. But otherwise, I want balloons and walks in the park. I want birthday parties for babies and field trips to the zoo. She should have told Abby then and there, Sheila said, dipping a fry into her chocolate shake. She should have called out, Mom, Jason just made the funniest joke. I thought about it for a moment. Is it too late? Is what too late? For Jessica to go to Abby and ask her if Jason got her that lingerie for her birthday. That he'd been so funny when he told Jessica about it, how he'd joked that Jessica could model it for him. Sheila nodded her head slowly. She could say that it was Jason's way of flattering Abby's figure, that it was exactly the same as her daughter's. That's what she should do, I said. That way, she lets Abby know what happened, but in a face-saving way for Abby. I smiled at my best friend. You're such a good problem solver. You always have been. Sheila shrugged. I'm great at solving other people's problems, less great at solving my own. I miss Tom. You could tell him that, I suggested gently, stealing one of her fries. You could text him. That seems awfully personal for a text, Sheila said. But sure, I could text him that I miss him, but he misses his dead wife, and he feels guilty about loving me. I just don't see how this thing gets fixed. Maybe it doesn't, I admitted. But it would be sad if you didn't give it one more shot. Did you pick up the quilt from the long armor? Saturday afternoon, Sheila confirmed. It's beautiful. What did you put on the label? Besides the usual information, this quilt was made for Tom with love from Sheila. I grimaced. You couldn't have gone one step farther. Told Tom I loved him on a quilt label? Sheila looked at me aghast. A label that everyone can see? Yes, I insisted. What's wrong with that? Love is private, Marnie. Well, the label's already made and attached, so there's no use in arguing the point now, I conceded. So, when are you giving him the quilt? Sheila shrugged. I don't know. Maybe never. Unless... Unless what? I asked, afraid I already knew the answer. Unless you could give it to him for me? I frowned. Are we still in high school? Please? Fine, I caved. I'll drop it by his house on my way home. Great, Sheila exclaimed, clearly relieved. And then I'm starting a new chapter, the No More Men chapter. If you say so. I do say so, Sheila waved down a passing waitress. More fries, please, she ordered. Make that a double. We're celebrating. Back at the store, Sheila handed over the bag that held Tom's quilt. Just drop it off and tell him I'll always think of him fondly, she instructed. Did I do that, dear diary? Did I drive over to Tom's house, ring the doorbell, and say, Here, Tom, this comes with best wishes from Sheila? Well, I drove over to Tom's house, and I did ring the doorbell. And when Tom answered the door, I shoved the quilt into his arms and said, Sheila loves you. Call her. And then I turned around and left, humming the Milton Falls High fight song all the way back to my car. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.